Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome back to New Books in Eastern European Studies, a channel of the New Books Network. I am Vladislav Lilic, a doctoral candidate in Modern European History at Vanderbilt University. In today's episode, I have the immense privilege to converse with Dr. Isabella Wagner, Associate Professor of Sociology at Collegium Civitas in Warsaw, Poland. Dr. Wagner holds an MA from Poznan's University of Music and a PhD in sociology from École Normale Supérieure, the EHESS, and the University of Paris 8. We will be discussing her captivating new book, Baumann, A Biography, published last year by Polity Press, the first comprehensive biography of the eminent sociologist and writer Zygmunt Bauman. The work narrates private and professional trajectories of one among few most influential thinkers of our time. Dr. Wagner, welcome to New Books Network, and thank you for taking the time to talk to me about your work.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I feel privileged to be here with you today.
As is customary on our channel, I will start us off by asking how your previous research led you to write about Baumann. Your first monograph, Producing Excellence, The Making of Virtuosos, was published in 2015. There, you shed light on the social dynamics behind the development of exceptional musical talent. How do the two projects relate?
It is a long story, because actually I am educated in France as a sociologist of work. I specialized in careers. And this work, which I did on Virtuoso and published in 2015, it was my first work. But after, I moved to laboratory researchers and I investigated academic careers. So I was for 10 years already at the university, back to the study of university careers. And all the time when I wrote about those people in laboratories, my colleague sociologist asked me, what about sociologists? So it was a project of a collective book with a French sociologist, Christophe Brochier. We are not yet done with that, but it will be, I hope so. This book should speak about the career of sociologists and different aspects of the careers as a determinant of our trajectories, professional trajectories. Baumann was one of the cases, should be one of the chapters in our book, because he developed his career largely over academic universe, and also it was at the last period of his career, means when people were retired and usually are not so active as he was. So it was spectacular, exceptional, and also for me it was very interesting, this aspect of political determinants of sociologists who are working in a authoritarian regime. So that was the idea. And after, when I started to collect the data, I had this first interview with him in 2013, and especially I went to the archives, Secret Services archives in Poland. There I saw that there's this huge amount of data and material, which also were helped me to tell this story. And the story was so huge that one chapter would never help me to explain why those accusations that he suffered from all his life after 68 especially were completely wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, for one, am exceptionally grateful and thankful that this chapter grew into a wonderful monograph. And before we dive into the details of the narrative, would you care to expand or elaborate on your methodological approach? You are, if I'm not mistaken, a proponent of the Chicago School of Sociological Research. So please tell us how studying wider social interactions and contexts can help us fully comprehend, understand individual trajectories?
Yes, thank you very much for this question. Sociological tradition of Chicago and interactionism is mainly known today by Goffman. It is face-to-face interactions, etc. I took much more from Hughes and the main concept of the main concept and idea of interactionism is not only face to face, but the person in his environment context, but also larger context. And that was my understanding of interactionism and master status, the concept of Hughes, a very old concept, but very good, helped me to organize the data. Means to understand the tensions between what we are calling identity, means how we see ourselves, and master status, how we are perceived by others. So these tensions and this theoretical frame helped me to organize the data, how I collect the data. So I'm a sociologist, so the interviews were for me very important, but not only. As a historian, I worked hours and hours in the archives, and I had the access to the archives of secret services, which are very good, because Bauman was under supervision long years before 68, but also he was in military service, so we could have the documents from that part, also archives providing from his job places, but also from the University of Warsaw when he was even a student. So I had his grades, etc. Even from the middle school, you know, before Second World War, I was lucky because he studied in Poznań in archives from Polish schools in Poznań, interwar period, were not burned during the war. So I was able to dig really into these archives. And the special... really exceptional input in my book. This is thanks to his family, his daughters, who gave me the full right to cite his personal journal. This is the about 100 pages of tape script. He addressed it to his children and grandchildren. Original was written in English because his grandchildren are not, they are not all speaking Polish. And yes, I largely cited this exceptional material.
Fascinating, fascinating. And you seek to explain how Bauman became what you term a global thinker. But his path commenced in the interwar Polish city of Poznan, as you mentioned already. A Jewish youth excelling in Polish schools, from early on, Bauman had to reconcile his attachment to Polishness and the realities of racial discrimination in the interwar era. How did this earliest stage of his life influence Bauman socially and intellectually?
I think that despite his very his own silence on this connection, because he never used his own experience as a case or as an illustration for his narratives, he was really silent about it. I think that it was obviously very important and it was crucial. Look, for example, his work on refugees. He was twice refugee. He was first time refugee as an adolescent, and especially in this private document that I am citing, it is very clear the connection between his engagement and late literature and the latest period and the books in which he's showing how our society work and how we're, for example, look for the book Wasted Life. His interest for this population and this part of a society, neglected, unseen, abandoned, that is certainly grounded in his childhood and in not only in the experiences of his parents, because he was in a, he was born in a family in which they had a higher culture capital, if we can say so, than a material situation. So they were educated, but they have trouble to survive to the end of the on, of the month. So he knew the situation of someone who is struggling with daily life. However, he was already in the interwar period engaged in Hashomer Hatzair, which was the organization, lefty organization, Jewish organization, that and this specific view of the world means we should reduce the inequalities, we need to fix this world, which is far to be perfect daily, and it is up to us that we need to work on a social justice. And this is something that people frequently connected to his period when he was in Soviet Union and engaged in a, you know, pioneers organization, etc. But it is pre-Soviet Union period. It is really engaged also in this, and foremost in this Jewish tradition, lefty tradition, yes. Jewish, not religious, yes, because Hashomer Hatzair, it was not really connected at that moment to the religious tradition.
Zionist, socialist youth organization.
Yes, and it was simply socialists scouting. Mm-hmm. We can say Jewish scouting socialist. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I mean, this is the perfect segue into my next question. You describe how Bauman, a teenage war refuge living deep in the Volga region of the Soviet Union after 1941, becomes committed to communist ideals, and he decides to join the struggle against Nazism. A decorated soldier, the liberator of Berlin, we see Bauman as an engaged post-war builder of the new Polish Homo Socialisticus, right? How did he eventually come to replace military uniform with academic pursuits?
Yeah, it was a long story. First of all, he was not in Berlin. He came to Berlin. He was, you know, wounded during the Kołobrzeg battle. It was a very important battle, and he was one of the 100,000 of people injured there. And he came to Berlin when everything was done already. But he's explaining this very well in his private text. But yes, he participated in the implementation of the new regime, but we forget frequently, and even historiography, Polish historiography, try to be black and white, because this just after the Second World War period and implementation of the new regime, socialist regime, is seen as something very homogeneous, which was completely untrue. And Bauman's direct supervisors and people who protected his career, they were from the option of people who were communist, pre-Second World War communist, Polish communist, who hated Stalin. Because Stalin murdered the leaders of this party before 1939, and those people who fought, who took part in a, you know, a Spanish war, they were completely in opposition. So they had idea of Polish communism, but it was not Stalinian communism. for them, Stalin was not communist. So it was internal struggle, even if the unit in which Bauman was incorporated, because he was not like volunteer, he was incorporated. And why he couldn't say no? Because his parents at that moment were still in Soviet Union. So if Bauman refused to join this new unit, which was created in 45 to protect the new regime, he could have trouble to have his parents back to Poland. You know, in 45, nobody was sure that these people who were still in Soviet Union will be back to Poland. So it is easy to blame him or to think about his choices when we know the history 50 years after. But what was my idea, and I tried really to show his decisions or the processes and his life in the context, contemporary to him context, not from our today's perspective.
Wonderful. And could we go back to the transition between a military career and academic career? That is very revealing. Yeah.
Yes, he was simply kicked out because of anti-Semitic wave again and again. Because actually, just 2 weeks ago, I had a presentation and my book was received and discussed by Polish sociologists and historians. And they said that this is micro-sociology of Polish anti-Semitism during 100 years, my book. It is not only the story of this exceptional person and his career, but it is also the history there. And it was, again, he was in the army. He was one of the youngest officers from that generation, and he was very successful. In one moment, his father went to the Israeli embassy for asking for the possibility to do his aliyah, means to be in Israel, to go to Israel, and it was finished for Bauman. And one way of putting these people who served in the army was not like dry eviction, but you know, in French we are saying voie de garage, so the way of parking people. So it was an academic career. They actually, when he was even in the army, he was a teacher also. He was the head of propaganda. He educated the next officers of propaganda, etc., etc. So he was already in between, but really in at the university, etc. He started his career there, and he jumped in, and everything what he did, it was, you know, a lot of people said exaggerated, because he was really fully involved, hardworking, obviously talented, and it worked very quickly. 53, it was year 53, and University of Warsaw, directly MA studies, because in Poland you cannot join. At that time, it was difficult. Today, it's almost impossible after BA to start PhD. So, and he did according to the rules, MA.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So this happens in January 1953. He's dismissed from the army. And then in the 1960s, we start to see the tensions between Bauman's identities and the Jewish master status, as you put it, that the Polish society had kept imposing on him, finally explode. Why was Bauman forced to leave Poland when he did and emigrate?
Yes, I would say that it was not new in 60s. It is all the time, because in 53, you see, he was evicted for the same reason. And at school before Second World War, he had the problems exactly for the same reason. So it is like kind of, you know, old and permanent story here. But 68, he was definitively evicted, and he was even perceived and announced by government as one of the main leader of 68 revolt, which in Poland was not revolt against capitalism or against actual system. It was the revolt organized against bureaucracy and against what they said. They didn't say we need to change the regime. They said we need to fix the regime because the this regime is the socialism is good, but what we have now, this is not the socialism. It is derivative of and pathological socialism. So they tried to. It was the kind of revolt which didn't contest the actual political system, and. Bauman was not one of the leader. However, he was revisionist. He was one of the thinkers, I would say, that was cited. He also gave a lot of talks. He was very close to the students. And during 68 event, yes, he acted as a leader. And I'm citing a scene which is completely unknown. And in Poland, nobody knew about this, when he, with his body, protected his students against, police, heavily armed and with the gas in the university building. So it was a beautiful, courageous story. He was a very courageous man.
Mm-hmm. A fascinating figure. And I find it interesting that many others, including Leszek Kolakowski, were emigrated at the same time, but Kolakowski did find his way back into the Polish academic establishment in the 1990s, for example, which never happened to Bauman. Could you comment on the reasons behind this divergence in these two famous Polish intellectuals' careers?
Yes, absolutely. And they were friends to some point. To some point, they were friends, but at the end of their life, it was the problem that I'm explaining in a book. Kołakowski was very charismatic. Bauman also was very charismatic. But Kołakowski was... took away which majority of Polish intellectuals, I would say, took after 89. He moved before 89, means Kołakowski became, he was Marxist, he was even a very, very active communist in his youth. That is something that people forget frequently, but he was much more active and aggressive in his speeches, etc., than Bauman was. Because just Bauman was from this other, we called it communism a la Polonaise, means Polish, not Russian, not Soviet communist. Okay, and Kołakowski changed when he emigrated. He became closer to capitalism, and after he became this intellectual that a lot of people in Poland after 89 and before the struggle against the regime in Poland, so underground and solidarity movement, for them Kołakowski was an intellectual guru without any doubts, and his thinking is grounded and close to the Catholicism. So he changed the writing of Kołakowski when from 50s and after, when you are reading later 70s, 80s, etc. You can see obvious change. And as Bauman said, he had several propositions to become Soviet, specialist of Soviet Union, and obviously criticized, but he stay always close to leftist ideas. I would certainly not communist anymore, but socialist, absolutely. He didn't change his, his ideas from 60. It was elaborated, obviously, postmodernism, etc., etc. But his political opinions and political sensitivity was always the same. So close to the people who need our support and against such heavy inequality. And again, with this last period of his life, he demonstrated how neoliberalism is toxic for society, yes, in the for social ties and relationships, etc., etc.
Yeah, this is maybe a good point to mention that his first work was actually on the British labor movement, which kind of reinforces the point that you're making right now.
Yes, but it was also, remember that they, and this is something which today sociologists, historians, thinkers, etc., and especially new generation, we are forgetting about the censure. Yes, censorship. You have the strong limitation in these countries in which you have no freedom, academic freedom, and freedom of speech. And why this choice of British Labour Party, etc.? Because working on Polish context or Soviet context in these years was completely dangerous, you know. So going outside was a better solution. Bauman learned English already in the high school, so in a middle school before Second World War. So he was he was very good in learning languages because he knew a lot of languages. So And he was supervised by Hochfeld, and Hochfeld was someone who knew very well the British Labour Party. He was close to this environment. He lived in London, etc., etc. So it was the several factors that played this role in this decision. And it was very good work, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how did he end up at the University of Leeds? In the 1970s, which is not what one might assume, because he definitely sought after some more prestigious, let's say, scholarly institutions offered him positions, including Yale, for example.
Yes, but there it was more proposition connected to this critic of Soviet Union, you know, and this is not what he would like to be. And he was against this, compartmentation, you know, they put you in the box, you were from Eastern Europe, specialist of Marxist, you were Stalinist, etc. Inspired to be a sociologist of culture, you know, with big ideas, someone who is not really always connected to Poland or Marxism, etc., etc. So I think that other researchers who were more familiar with British educational systems and will go to the archives and will have time to dig in Leeds and are expert in British academia and the British political party will perhaps in the future explain better than me how it happened. I presented what it was not obvious, but what I could find. But this part, starting from Leeds and British life of Bauman, I think that it will continue to be described and analyzed by his friends, specialists, you know, and the people who are really unrooted in a British context. It was bold. Leeds had the ambitions to open up and not limit them to only to British scholars. Actually, I'm writing here about their tradition. Leeds tradition was very progressive. They had first non-white professors, and they offered positions to non-British professors. So they were not such they were really progressive. And it was the idea of decentralized London. And Miliband, who was the friend of Bauman, came there. So it was the idea of people who worked at Leeds University and managed this to have, to create a specific new environment. And he was the part of the picture, yes, of the project. And it was successful, I think. You know, the beautiful, prestigious places frequently are not offering such freedom as this secondary environment and places.
In my view, one of the most fascinating aspects of your book is the careful interweaving of Bauman's familial relations, and most crucially, the companionship with his wife, Janina Bauman. Would you please tell us more about the ways in which their relationship shaped and reshaped Bauman as a thinker and a public intellectual over the many years of their marriage?
Yes, this is probably also the input of my previous work on career of researchers. I saw how much partner, I would not say wife, even if 90% of cases or even 95 or more, the woman is this part in, you know, in the backstage, how it is crucial for career of person who is visible. And it was also the case for Bauman. It is not something exceptional. However, again, it is he provides an extreme case because they lived together 61 years and she died in 2009. And from the beginning, they met in when they both were studying on their BA, so their sweethearts couple, yes. And I think that she was crucial not only because she organized his family life, because he was much more involved in, you know, homework, some during some periods that she was. He was a very progressive man from the point of view of feminist studies, you know. But she was the partner of the discussions. She also did, from the beginning, editing work. It was related to her professional life, and she was also a writer. So the work on the text, reading books together, and having this intellectual inspiring partner was very important. And I think that this is something which needs to be shown in order to understand the career of these prestigious and eminent personages. Bauman wrote in Polish, first of all. After they moved, they were evicted, so they spent 3 years in Israel. And during this Israeli period, he wrote again in Polish, he continued. And when they moved to Leeds, after 10 years only, Bauman started to write in English. So she always edited her his work in Polish, but not in English. However, in UK, what was very important, it was the moment when she started writing her book, and she published two main books. First is her journal, based on her journal from the ghetto, Warsaw ghetto. She was Holocaust survivor, and this is very important book for historians of Holocaust, very highly appreciated. And literary, from the point of view of literature, it is also a very important book. And it is incredible, and that was it. I'm saying this on based on testimonies of their friends and children, that he didn't realize, actually, all family didn't realize how talented she was. And he probably realized how talented she was, but they didn't realize altogether what kind of experience it was, the ghetto.
Yeah. And when Bauman himself mentioned numerous times that they had never discussed her
yes.
immediate experiences, right?
Yes, yes, but it is typical for all Holocaust survivors, I think. When you are reading their testimonies, etc., it is it started. I explain it in the book after Eichmann process. It was really a revival and this new wave of testimonies. And when Janina's mother died and her sisters, they survived all three of them. So she was alone in life, and she said, "Now I need to give my testimonies." And this book impacted really strongly Bauman. More in details about this impact and relationship between two books, so Winter in the Morning by Janina Bauman and Holocaust, the Modernity and the Holocaust by Zygmunt Bauman. More on this relationship, I wrote in a chapter which is published in a collective book, Modernity and the Holocaust Revisited. It is a book which will be published next year by Routledge. And editors were Jack Palmer and Dariusz Brzeziński. And here you have, I think, three chapters connected to this issue of collaboration. I call it collaboration between Janina and Zygmunt Bauman. Certainly, it was a huge, not only from the perspective, academic perspective, you know, in Bauman's life, Modernity and the Holocaust is highly appreciated, and this is how he became really the important thinker in social sciences and history, etc. But it was for him also. And here Brian Shayet explained it very well. It was his Jewish turn in his life. Doesn't mean that he went back to synagogue and became religious, not at all. But he really reflected deeply on his, not really on his origin, but on the Jewish condition. Yes, or anti-Semitism, and he started to work on it. So it was also very important. That was his last, last period in his academic activity, yes, when he was dean and he worked at Leeds University.
Bauman died some 4 years ago in 2017, and you end the monograph with the achievement of worldwide recognition for his late works. It might be interesting to know that he wrote Modernity and the Holocaust when he was 64, I believe, and including the celebrated Liquid Modernity that came out in 2000 when he was 75. What was it that made his scholarship so appealing to such broad audiences the world over since the turn of the century?
You know, when he was very young and he was in the army, he needed to speak to everyone, means to people who were analphabet, and he needed to explain them Marxism, you know, and doctrines, etc. So I think that he was not only trained to share about his ideas, but he was really well-skilled, and he knew how to do it. It is one moment in his life when he published his first paper. It was he was 11 years old, and it was a journal in Polish language for Jewish public, and he spoke about Champollion, archaeologist, and his discoveries, because he learned it and he would like to share it immediately. And I think that this is this, you know, his life attitude. I learned something and I would like to share. But to share with people who certainly will not have time, you know, skills and tools for understanding what I am doing, I am reading. So this way of sharing in a accessible to large public way. This is something which is frequently missing to scholars, thinkers, etc. And it is, I think that academia is not paying attention to that. Perhaps I have this European view, because in the United States, I think that you have more attention to a large public. In France, for example, academic language should be non-accessible, which is contrary to Chicago school. Chicago sociologists always pay attention that we need to write in a way that someone who is not a graduate sociology department could understand what we are doing. And Bauman, it was his idea that we can, through writing, we can change the world. And that was very powerful. And this is something which keep him, it kept him young. When you are, you know, one of the book which I'm using with my students, and I'm not a Bauman specialist or postmodern expert, you know, postmodernity expert. I'm really a Chicago qualitative methods scholar, not at all big theories, etc. But when I'm working with my students, I'm working on liquid love. And in this book, he's passing from one-to-one partnership and, first of all, heterosexual. Very quickly, he's passing to homosexual and other types of love. And he's writing a lot about love by internet. So, you know, he was 80-something when he wrote it. So it is incredible, his capacity to be with society, with developing society. And after this book is also for me very important because he is finishing. The love of he's passing through the love of your neighbor, which is very important because, as we know from Polish history, neighbors could kill you. And after he's finishing with refugees, which is today in Europe the issue number one, because if you are aware about what is going on in December 2021 in Poland, the authorities forbidden to give the help to people who are dying in a frozen forest. So that is something which you know, and that happened in the same border that Bauman escaped. Bauman was pushed back. Yes, when Nazi came and occupied already Polish territories in 1939 in the fall, they tried to cross illegally border of Soviet Union, and it was already finished the agreement that they can escape. So Soviet tried to push them back, and they ask to, however, they try to manage with the soldiers, and he closed the eyes. So it was the act of humanity, because it is how they Bauman survived. And today you have the same area, geographic area, and Polish so-called democratic army is refusing the request for asylum from people who are coming here with kids, with women, pregnant women. They're packing them in a military truck and they're putting them on a border with Belarus alone in a frozen forest by minus something temperature. So we have the and what is spectacular that even humanitarian organizations are absent and informal, the civil society organizations are there for helping people, but they have no access to these people because army prevent this access. So that is, I wonder what Bauman would write today about this, but this story is horrible. And this is why I think his thinking is not at all something, you know, which belongs to the past, but it's very much unfortunately, this part of his writing is very much actual.
Again, your response anticipates my follow-up question, but I will ask it nonetheless. Did Bauman finally manage to resolve the Jewish-Polish identity conundrum of dichotomy that had occupied him since the 1930s? What does his strained relationship with the new Poland's political intellectual establishment in the 1990s and in 21st century tell us about the state of post-transition or transition Eastern Europe, not only Poland?
Oh, that is a difficult question, because I try to never respond if he resolved something or not. It is a question addressed to him. I think that he always, based on what he wrote in this private paper, he always struggled to be bold, to have this capacity and to have this recognition from others to accept him both as a Jew and Pole at the same time. The category, which is completely deconstructed, put apart by society, by majority of society, and this process of putting apart, focusing on Polishness as a, in which Catholicism is the most important part, is growing. So from that point of view, his idea of being together or having this double mixed, really really mixed identity, probably today is more and more the utopian impossible project. Now, he was not rejected after, he was very early back to Poland in 88, so even before 89, but he was well accepted and welcomed by a small part of Polish academic world. Not all people rejected him, but yes, majority and establishment, I would say, rejected him. And it was two different rejections. It was this elegant official, not official, but elegant rejection by this establishment when they refused his honoris causa, which is called renovation of his PhD, renovation of his PhD at Warsaw University. And this rejection by Polish society in form of protests during his seminars and talks, and those protests, very aggressive, were organized by neo-fascist groups. And it was not marginal phenomenon. That is very important and need to say. His pictures were burned during public manifestations on the street. He represented something that is called Judeo-communism, means he was engaged, lefty engaged. After, you see, in 2015, when it was so-called first crisis of immigrants in Europe, I'm saying so-called because researchers are saying and proving that it was really a propaganda, anti-refugees propaganda, and Bauman tried to explain this phenomenon, etc. So his writing and his position supporting refugees, trying to understand and explaining what this migratory phenomenon was announced as a, he was communist, pro-Muslim, so against Catholicism, against Polish culture. You know, it was seen really as an aggression to Polish identity. He actually is speaking about mixophobia, very interesting term, which he explained why we're rejecting everything which is not similar to us. Yes, we are afraid of being mixed.
Seems like Bauman's work will stay with us, and there's still much we can learn from his opus. Finally, Where has this project taken you, Dr. Wagner? What are you currently working on?
I spend more time with Bauman because I translated Bauman into Polish. It was very important to me, and Polish version is 300 pages larger. It was important because of this actually important fashion and revival of fascism in Poland. Just a couple of days ago, Poland was this... The Warsaw was the place of meeting of the main leader of neo-fascist and extreme right wing parties in Europe. So this is something horrible to someone who knows, I'm not saying it's lefty or not lefty, but who knows simply history of Poland. So after spending this half of the year translating and writing more about Bauman, I started to work on another person who is who has an amazing life and is almost unknown, and I would like to publish her biography. This is Dr. Alina Margolis Edelman. And I hope that I will be able to publish this story, because this is the story of Socialist Jewish Party Bund. Her even grandparents were close to this amazing in heritage. I'm speaking here not from the point of view of political sciences, but social engagement, because it was it will be a story of social engagement. And she was a pediatric doctor, Holocaust survivor, and here I will also tell the story of Warsaw Ghetto, School of Nurses in that place. So for one part, really tragic stories. Also, Dr. Alina Margolis Edelman published a book about the Holocaust, a very important small book collection of testimonies. And she was also kicked out because of 68 from Poland. She was from Jewish origin, and both her parents were also medical doctors. So again, a story of familial and professional inheritance. So my background of sociologist of work, you know, and professions will be here very useful. And after 6 years, he moved to France, where I lived also. I was immigrant there. And she has a very difficult life. She couldn't, during several years, work as a physician. She needed to pass exams, etc., etc. And in late 70s, she was engaged in a humanitarian work. And here, her new life, a little bit like for Bauman, you know, when he started his after retirement, so during retirement, his new life, she started with the boat people in Chinese Sea, with you know, after Vietnam War, saving people simply in a time when a lot of people thinks already about retirement, you know. So she was one of the co-creator of Doctors of the World, so very famous today institution, and she was in Salvador, Guatemala, Chad, Bosnia, Leningrad, and Poland, and she created a lot of missions of that organizations, as well as other organizations, etc. So she was really incredible. And today, on this horrible Polish border, she missed a lot, because she was able to displace the mountains for saving children. And she's today known, and that is here where feminist studies will help me to analyze this. She's well known as a wife of Marek Edelman, who was a ghetto hero, and also underground Polish hero and very important person. But yes, that is the fate of women frequently, that they are not such under the spot as it should be. So I hope that this work also, this is not only work on a biography, this is a work on a history, but also and foremost on engagement to humanitarian, you know, humanitarian engagement. And that is something which we need absolutely today.
Remarkably intriguing, and I cannot wait to see it off the presses. Dr. Wagner, it was a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much for joining New Books Network, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.